Hey, what's up, sinners and choosers? Welcome to Choose Your Own Religion. My name is Joe. Thanks for tuning in. My guest today is Tarly Mihelic. He's an improviser, comedian. As we talk about near the top of the show, he runs a show called Catharsis at UCB Sunset once a month. That's dramatic improv. And he's a great improviser. I've seen him around the scene for a while. We talk a little bit how we met. And I want to thank him for coming on. And I hadn't really talked to him much before this. And so it was really cool to get to know him and hearing his take as somebody who grew up in another Presbyterian youth group. It was kind of cool to feel that experience mirrored back to me. So go check out Catharsis if you're in LA. And if you like this show, you can go to chooseyourownreligion.com for more old episodes, blog posts, which will hopefully by the time you hear this, we'll be back. I've been slacking on the actual writing and posting of them, but I will get them all out. So stay tuned if you like reading This Week in Spiritual Narcissism. It's been more of This Month in Spiritual Narcissism recently, but whatever. Those will be back soon. And if you want to subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher, leave a rating or review, you can certainly do that. And that's it. Please give it up for Tarly Mihelic. Kick it off.
Great.
Thanks so much for coming.
Of course. Yeah, thanks for having me.
I did early... Quick confession, I don't know how to pronounce your last name.
Oh, yeah. That's I get that every time I go on a podcast. It's Mihelic.
Mihelic.
Yeah, like helicopter.
Cool. It actually makes so much sense now that you said
it's a lot. It's deceptively simple.
Yeah, you want to put an accent in there, like Mihelic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and it's been taken all over the alphabet.
Like your whole, like this is like a lifelong
bit thing. So I excuse it every single time and have boiled it down to a very simple way, which is just like helicopter without the opter.
Sick. Well, thanks so much for coming.
Yeah, thanks
Mr.
for having me.
Mihelic. I think you're one of the guests I have where I don't really know much of what into. I think I was trying to think earlier today when I first saw you. I think it was at Purgatory like maybe 3 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like a Friday.
It's been about 2 years because, we've been running the show for about 2 years.
Okay,
but yeah.
So maybe 2 years ago then. And I think I did like a lottery spot monologue one time
on
that show.
Oh, man. We haven't had a lottery in forever, so it was a long time
yeah,
ago. We did that for a few weeks, and it was so hard to get people to volunteer that we stopped doing it. Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm glad I got in on the ground floor.
Yeah, you were a helpful volunteer.
I just proved my legit Purgatory fan.
Oh, yeah. You're an old school Purgatory fan.
Yeah. But what you're up to now that I've seen more you talk about a lot in the past year is Catharsis. Is kind of like, is that your big thing you kind of have going on now?
Yeah, I mean, we still have Purgatory is still going, so we're twice a month at the Clubhouse, and then once a month at the Inner Sanctum.
Yeah, yeah.
So we still have that show. And then, Catharsis is a show I started almost a year ago. The first show was in September, and it's a dramatic improv show. So, started at the Clubhouse and then moved over to UCB Sunset in February.
So dramatic improv being everybody plays it straighter than straight, like, or they're trying to, not even, is it playing straight men, or is it just trying to intentionally be like dramatic? Like, I guess it's dramatic improv, right?
Yeah, I think that was the onus behind it was to have people go up and just act, you know, and like be grounded, be emotional, be connected to the other performers in the scene, because a lot of the stuff that I was seeing in indie improv especially was a lot of people just going as hard and as fast as they could for jokes,
right?
To try to get that laugh, because those can be addictive. They can, can be a real dopamine rush. And so this was like taking your time, being patient, and then having it build to something more. Now, there's times when it's insanely funny, and then there's times when it's like really serious, but it's really cool to see how people interpret the style to do it.
That's really cool. Have you found, especially early on, that whether you were in it or other people have had to work against some of your instincts, like some of your improv training instincts?
Yeah, there's a lot of, that was a challenge, I think, at the beginning, was there would be so many moments in which it was like, oh, this could easily segue into comedy, or there's a joke that could be made here immediately, and really pulling back from those instincts and being like, oh, it'll pay off more later, and it'll be much more interesting if people believe what you're doing on stage and feel like a connection to the performers and the characters from within the scene.
That's cool. And are you doing forms with that, or is there any structure to it, or are you kind of
not necessarily kinda... I actually leave it open to the groups that participate. For the most part, they do mono scenes. That's generally what people do.
It lends itself to
mono scenes. I have seen people do tags that have been successful. I've seen ones that haven't been as successful. I think that's just because they tend to be slower scenes, and so they don't really lend themselves to edits and things like that. But the 20-minute mono scene tends to give a lot more room to build up something that people can emotionally connect with.
It's like a one-act play type feel to it.
Absolutely.
I was thinking what would a dramatic montage even look like? It'd be like Crash or something, like, you know, the movie Crash.
Yeah, absolutely. And you'd have to find different ways to edit, because a sweep edit, you wouldn't have a laugh as a cue for the edit. So yeah, I know it can be done, and I know it can be done well. I just haven't seen anyone attempt it yet.
Sure. I wonder if Crash is actually like a Herald form, if you analyze it.
Oh, man, I don't know.
It's been so long since I've seen that movie.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll ever watch it again either. So.
what made you want to start Cathartic? I mean, I think it's a fucking awesome, cool idea. What was it that you were like, oh, this thing... Like, what happened?
Yeah, I think I had... it came out of a couple of different things. One is I took a one-act play class with Brandon Gardner, where the emphasis was on performance. And then at the same time, I started a class with Johnny Meeks, who also, it was very much about emotionally committing to scenes and performing. And so I started to notice this trend in classes in which there was a shift... not necessarily away from game, whereas the game of the scene was not the focus of the class.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, watching Purgatory every week, we were weekly up until last month. So we had a show every single week, plus the Inner Sanctum one. So I was seeing, you know, 5 teams a week, 25 teams a month.
Yeah.
And I just noticed that so much of what was happening, especially with newer teams or even teams that have been performing for a long, is you get trained on the indie scene, which rewards a super fast play, hyper fast play, jokes. And they can be insanely funny. And it's not to say that there isn't so much funny improv that was happening, but what was the difference between what I was seeing in teams like, you know, JV or Bangarang or a lot of the weekend teams or things was performance. They were performing the scenes, and they looked like you believed who these characters were on stage, even in a very funny scene. And so I was like, it would be really cool to see, especially since I know there is so much good acting talent in the improv community. Yeah. I was like, I want to see these people get up and show their chops.
Oh, it's so cool. Especially, I mean, so many of us did like theater in high school and shit. Yeah.
And I think what can frustrate a lot of people about improv, especially when you're performing the montage in a big group, is oftentimes you feel like as soon as you start to establish anything, you're tagged out or your scene is edited or, you know, it goes in a different direction. And so this just like challenges people to like establish a base reality and then live in it for a little while and then eventually get to that place where you can make confident choices based on the characters, like logically follow them. So the characters themselves have a game, right?
Yeah.
But without the fear that someone's going to come in and take it from you or snatch it up so you don't rush through it.
Oh, that's so cool. It's I guess that seems like it's more even chasing that one of my favorite improv like coaching terms, that satisfying feeling. Like satisfying scene.
And it's incredibly satisfying to feel yourself in it, and you get a very different reaction from the audience. Like you get a couple of different things. It's like you learn that really pregnant silences are like the big laughs of the scene. That's like people being totally locked in and totally like into the scene, and so they're paying attention, so they're not even breathing, so it doesn't and so you're not looking and going like, oh, I'm terrible because they're not laughing. You're going like, oh, they're keyed in. So
yeah, you're killing with silence.
Correct.
Like, and if it's a silent whole night, you're like, oh, hell yeah.
And then but then there's also moments where like someone will say something that breaks the tension, that is an earned joke or a funny line, and the laughs are huge. The laughs out of a silence are so much bigger than the laughs that like punctuate an improv scene that's been, you know, trying to build on laugh on top of laugh on top of laugh. This is, it's why sometimes I feel like when I watch dramas, like movies, they can tend to have jokes that are funnier than most comedy movies I see. Like I tend to laugh more out loud because I am relieved that the tension has been broken in some way.
Right, and like there seems like in a drama, the stakes somehow feel higher because they're built in, they're kind of designed to make the stakes increase and
absolutely.
Feel, and so that's and feel more believable with. So yeah, then there's something that relieves that. I mean, that's why like Get Out was so fucking awesome.
Yeah,
you know, because it rode that line. I mean, it was almost impeccable how much there was a lot of comedy in it, obviously, but then it managed to make it like genuinely so tense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's cool. It sounds like you have like a. Are you like? Do you have like a director kind of any aspirations to you at all? Like, is that something you're interested in?
Yeah, it is something that I definitely would like to do. In the future, I think my career ambition is I want to write and create shows,
yeah,
stuff like that. So, but I do absolutely love directing and producing shows like this, like basically creating either the template or the form, and getting to see so many people that I respect and admire mm-hmm. and have worked with, like perform in this different. Capacity. It'd be very cool to direct someday, but it's not something that I'm super focusing on right
sure
now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. You have a good director vibe to you.
Oh, thanks, man.
I feel like you could like hold court pretty well. I don't know how to, I'm just trying to think how to segue this into religion, so this sentence will serve as the segue.
Great.
Into the
we did
the
it
thing. But I'm yeah so you grew up You said ambiguous or ambivalent,
yeah.
rather,
yeah.
towards religion. So mom and dad, not hardcore about anything.
No, and I think that was basically a function of the fact that my parents got divorced when I was two. Mm. So I don't even remember them being together.
Oh, wow.
As long as I could know, they lived separately. And my dad, when I was younger, was a... he was a lapsed Catholic. Like, he'd grown up Catholic. He went mm-hmm. to Catholic school, Catholic high school. Everything was Catholic.
Right.
At a certain point, he left the faith.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, he met and married my stepmom. And my stepmom, at the time, who had also grown up Catholic, was part of a Unitarian church.
Cool. Yeah,
yeah. So it was like the Church of Universal Light type uh-huh. church. So
super hip.
Very hip. Yeah, yeah. It was like very hip. And this was like the early 90s. And so it was a lot of like the moon and the stars and mm-hmm. the, yeah, and like all that kind of stuff like that. Like very positive and very, but very communal. she actually lived... on a commune of sorts. That's,
wow.
Yeah, it's actually out in Corona, California, called Glen Ivy. They have a hot springs there, and so it's a day spa and resort, but then there's also this component of it that is a commune. And
that's so cool.
People live there, and they, you know, they live there, and they work there, and stuff like that. So
did you partially grow up then on the
No, weekend? But I would go every Sunday. So
okay. So
by the time that my dad and she met, she was no longer living on the commune, but she was still attending service there.
Gotcha,
so
okay.
And that's where they got married too. So
oh.
So I remember going there every Sunday, and that was like church for us. There's like pictures of me participating in the Moon and the Stars pageant and like
the
yeah.
Moon and the Stars pageant.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what's involved in the Moon and the Stars pageant?
I think it would just be very similar to like a church play or a school play, but we all were wearing, you know, cardboard like stars and planets and stuff, and it was very much like a religious play, except the religious figures were not God and Jesus, and that was the moon and the planets and the all
oh
that
my
kind
God.
Of stuff like that. Yeah.
That's so cool.
So I remember that as a kid. Then I know that when I got a little bit older and my sisters were born, my dad and my stepmom had two girls. I think they both made the decision that they wanted their girls to grow up with traditional religion of sorts. And so they both went back to Catholicism.
Wow.
Yeah. So they both went back, and they still go to church every single Sunday. I would not consider them hardcore,
mm-hmm.
But they were very involved in the church. Like, it was very much like on a social level or
sure,
community
yeah.
level.
Yeah, yeah.
Religion was never a huge component of it. I find my dad to be a relentlessly practical person. And
yeah.
so it was very much about, I think, ceremony
sure,
more
yeah.
than religion.
Not connecting to the sort of mental constructs or like there's some people who go to church and get off just on the theology right. aspect and of like reading like the next text they hadn't read like in 30 yeah. years, and they're like, ooh, I haven't thought about this meaning before.
Yeah, my dad, it's I've never found him to be a person who was super into the that type of stuff or found some sort of and I could be wrong, maybe he I don't want to speak for him, but
yeah,
but I always found him to it to be more about the ceremony and the, you know, the
community,
yeah, especially yeah. since Catholicism is so heavily structured,
sure,
in terms of their church services, in terms of the hierarchy of the church and all that. So
yeah,
and then on my mom's side, because I lived with my mom growing up, my mom had, I believe, grew up Methodist, and then, but by the time I was born, she was attending a Presbyterian church.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so when I was a kid, my parents both made the decision that they were not going to baptize me, because obviously they were of different faiths or different ideas around it, and so they basically left the decision up to me.
Oh,
so
it was, okay.
He can decide when he grows up or when he gets older what he wants to do. And so I remember like dabbling a bit when I was young. Like my dad would have me go to the Catholic church with them sometimes. Especially when I was with them, we would go. And then, when I was in seventh grade, I started going to a youth group at the Presbyterian church in my town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it I grew up Presbyterian too. My dad's a Presbyterian yeah, minister. Yeah. Was it the PCUSA or PCA? Do you remember? Did they like women?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Absolutely.
PCUSA. Then. Yeah. That's the liberal sort of.
Oh yeah.
The more mainstream one.
Very liberal. Like, yeah. Okay, I believe the current pastor at that church is a woman.
Okay. Then or, yes.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
the other one, I mean, it's always interesting hearing about how these, like, they're so split, but the Presbyterian Church of America, they're the ones who don't believe women should be leaders at all.
Yeah.
And then the PCUSA, the one I grew up in, and like, apparently the one you went to youth group in, yeah, they've had women ministers for like 60 years or something.
Yeah, 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 which yeah. was, it was a beautiful, like, it was an old church, like, it was like a 100-year-old church. And
where is this?
In Riverside, California.
Okay.
Yes. Cool. Yeah. Beautiful old church, and I really liked the youth group because it was just fun, I always felt like the religion was the lowest possible priority.
Right.
Yeah, we spent very little time talking about God and Jesus, uh-huh. and if we did, it was never in the punitive sense.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, it was always like we never even talked about hell. We never talked about that yeah. type of stuff. It was very yeah. much it always felt very progressive to me. It always felt like
positive.
About, yeah, and like going out and like doing real good in the community and world.
Yeah,
which I connected with on a level. I never really connected with it spiritually. Mm-hmm. And I have never really like I've always found myself, I wouldn't say I'm an atheist, but I would say agnostic for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing really stuck with me, but I went for years because I just liked all the people and,
yeah.
I really enjoyed doing it, and it never felt like it tried to influence my brain or my morality or anything like that.
Yeah, it wasn't like, it's not like people are asking you each week like, so what do you really believe?
Yeah,
you know, nobody's like quizzing you or like.
Yeah, exactly. I never felt that that pull towards ideologies and I would say even political beliefs that I disagreed with.
Yeah, same here. And mine was my Presbyterian church was in North Carolina, like a small town, and so it was split pretty evenly politically. I would say pretty middle of the road. You had plenty on both sides of the aisle, but yeah, it didn't really play into much of a factor,
right?
And I know my dad intentionally did not inject his own sort of political opinions into sermons or anything like that. Yeah, I mean,
dad was the pastor.
Yeah, my dad's he's the pastor,
the minister. I'm sorry,
they all work.
That's yeah, yeah,
past preacher, whatever.
His ministers are their doctors of ministry, though, right? So,
oh yeah, then he is a minister.
Yeah,
yeah.
As the Presbyterians and Methodists, the Lutherans, you still have a doctor in theology. Whereas,
right.
like, if you're a pastor of an evangelical church, you just show up and
sure.
say you're the pastor of the evangelical church.
Right. You print it off the internet.
Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
But I think, for me, with every word I use, is just like what my brain is.
Yeah, it's all just
closest.
Nomenclature.
Yeah,
right?
I was like, yeah, minister, pastor, I'm not father though. Father is the weird
no,
one.
No, father's a Catholic priest.
Right. Yeah, yeah, that wouldn't be. I've never
or a cult
felt
leader.
Right. Right. definitely a cult leader. So you never connected to it. It wasn't, were you having like a skeptic's approach towards stuff?
Yeah. And I think, where there is, I think people probably have different approaches. I mean, I know people have different approaches to religion, and I think there's certain people who, let religion inform them. And so they, when they're searching for something, or they connect with something, or something speaks to them, they tend to absorb the teachings of that particular church and faith, and then modulate their behavior, thought patterns, political beliefs, whatever, to fit that ideology. Whereas I found myself continually searching for something that fit me as I was.
Yeah.
And so I was always looking for something that essentially was like, oh, these are the beliefs that I currently already hold, in terms of, you know, like growing up, especially with my mom being very liberal, my mom being very progressive, and having these particular types of political beliefs, especially, you know, 20 years ago, like surrounding, you know, homosexuality, pretty much anything that, you know, in terms of immigration, in terms of anything like that. And so when there was ever a question of that came up in any type of theology or ideology, that repelled me in a very strong way.
And
I remember having a friend invite me to her youth group, and her youth group was at a evangelical church that was nearby. And it's very appealing and can draw you in, because it was so much flashier than our youth.
Oh, yeah, the band and everything.
Brand new church, like modern facilities. They're playing rock music.
Pastor's in a Hawaiian shirt and
exactly.
jeans.
And it's very much like it's geared.
And he is a pastor, by the way.
Yes. Yes. He's a pastor, not a minister. And it's very much geared towards the youth. And it very much is tapping into stuff that you would say like, oh, I see that in my everyday life. It's like creating MTV with a Christian slant, right?
Right. So,
which is, and so when I first went, I was like, oh, this is way cooler than mine, because my minister and my youth group leader and all of them, they were like dweebs, like, you know, they were older.
Yeah.
They were kind. They were generous.
They weren't Jesus freaks. They were Jesus geeks.
Yeah. They were just, and so warm and so kind and so loving, but it was like, it never really felt super cool. It was just fun. And so,
You can only get so cool with an organ.
Right. Exactly.
You can get pretty cool, but only so cool.
Oh, yeah. We had the full organ. We had a bell choir that I was in.
Oh, the handbells?
Yeah, handbells.
Handbells. Oh, my God. I keep meaning to write like a sketch or something with handbells, like a web series thing. Just because I don't think enough people appreciate or know what handbells are.
Yeah, like, I mean, learning to play them, it was like, it's tough.
The big ones, like the giant ones that like the guys always had to end up with.
Yeah, and you have to move them up and down in order to like get the different types of sound and pitches.
Yeah, but you're like an 11-year-old boy. Yeah. And you don't know. You're like, I don't have the arm strength.
Exactly. But anyway, so this other church and the other churches in my town, there's a huge one that you probably, if you pay attention, like we'll see bumper stickers for, which is called the Harvest Christian Fellowship, and it's in Riverside, and it's a mega church. It's a huge, huge evangelical church.
I was about to say the Harvest right there in the name is sort of a creepy vibe to
exactly.
it off the bat.
And every single year they would have the Harvest Crusade, which would take place at Angel Stadium. And it's like Christian rock bands, and it's huge. And it's like 2 days of like worship, and you know, they fill the stadium; it sells out.
I want to say I know somebody on this podcast earlier. I want to say maybe Dan Prevett. I don't know if you know Dan, but I think he went to one of those. I want to say you're bringing me flashbacks.
Oh yeah, he probably did
just a massive like revival event. People like being saved and stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. That was a big component of like Harvest was in the middle of their church service.
Yeah.
They would do a thing where it's like if anyone's ready to accept Jesus Christ, people would come to the front, and then everybody would come up and put their hands on them, and it was a big like, and they'd have to declare in front of everyone. Everything was about evangelizing, right? It was about
get harvested.
Correct. Yeah. And so the spectacle of it was very, very different than the ceremony of a Presbyterian service, which can look very right. similar to a Catholic service. Like, it's yes, all about, yes. like, you know, you have your first reading, your second reading.
Right.
Anyway, so, like, going to that at first, I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. Plus, there's so many of my friends from my high school here, like, people that I know. And so if I went to this evangelical youth group, I'd be surrounded by people that I see on a daily basis. And, mm-hmm. like, and so... and it's trendy, and so it's drawing more people. And there were people skateboarding, there was skate ministry, there was all sorts of stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
But the messaging at the youth group was like, you'd start by playing a game, so you'd do like Chubby Bunny or something like that,
right.
which would be like, oh, an icebreaker, and everybody be giggling and having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd sit down, and it would be an hour-long lecture on the sins of homosexuality, the sins of premarital sex, the sins of,
ugh.
Yeah, the fact that you... should really choose your friends based on who is saved and who is not saved, because a person who is not saved is going to try to pull you away from Jesus. And so,
wow.
yeah, unless they decide that they also want to get saved. So you can do everything you can to try to save them as well. But if you fail doing that, then you need to cut them out of your life, because they will get in the way of your relationship with God.
Wow.
Right. Which, when I was in ninth grade at my friend's thing, I was almost asked to leave on the first night that I went, because I challenged the youth minister because of he gave a lecture on how, while Judaism and Islam and some of the other religions are, like, Christianity was birthed from them,
like the Abrahamic religions.
The Abrahamic religions,
yeah.
Those people were though going to hell because they had not accepted Jesus Christ as their personal Lord and Savior. And it just broke something in my brain that just could not rationalize that or accept that or feel that made. And so I argued. And at a certain point, he was like, "If you continue to argue, I'm going to need you to leave, because this is harmful to the other.
Oh my yeah, God,
the other members of the youth group who were here to."
Just learn the truth.
Yeah. And so I was not invited back by this particular friend.
Wow.
Which was totally fine. I wouldn't have gone anyway.
Good for you for standing up, man.
I mean, but that also just, all that did was tell me, like, oh, this isn't going to be for you.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And that was the great thing about going to the Presbyterian youth group, was there just wasn't any of that. It wasn't like, yeah.
Yeah, no, I definitely didn't have any of that kind of thing either with my Presbyterian. We would talk about, like, Bible texts and Christian concepts a lot, but they were always the positive ones, never the negative and the judgmental ones.
We did too. There was always a biblical lesson, like, or there was always a lesson surrounding, but it was always about, like, being a good person,
right?
And,
like, acceptance and forgiveness,
and like works, and like going out and like into the world, and
yeah.
like we did a lot of service projects and a lot of things. Mm-hmm. We go, but never, and never it was like when we went and did something, it was never, oh, by the way, we did this for you, so come to our church, or like
right.
do anything like that. It was very yeah. much like you went out to do it because it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, and that reminds me, I've gone to like one or two evangelical services. I went to one earlier this year. I've been doing the whole thing this year where I'm like trying to go to, I've been going to different churches like once a week or whatever.
That's great.
Blogging about it. But like one I went to early on was an evangelical church up in Pasadena. And I noticed what I didn't hear was the direct stuff that you're talking about in the youth group, but I'm imagining it must be in the same as theirs. But what I did hear in the service is a lot of like the dog whistle type stuff, where it starts subtly sort of sinking in there. They're not going to be explicit almost like that publicly, but they'll say things like, "God, you know, God with marriage between a man and a woman," or like, you know, they'll use certain language that's mm-hmm. very much like a wink and a nudge.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's, maybe the language has, they've learned that they can't be
so direct.
Yeah.
To try to get people to like,
with what's going on in the world today, it doesn't seem to. But yeah, I do the most direct thing that ever happened was, this was like a year after 9/11. And I went to a church service with a friend of mine. I think it was a girl I was dating at the time. And they played a short documentary that was about, so this was 2002, and it was about first responders. And it was about the first responders going up to the building. And it was this very, like, heavy and very somber short documentary talking about, it was interviews, on-camera interviews with firefighters. And they were saying things like, you know, I watched, you know, my brothers in arms, like, run up into the towers, grab people, bring them down to the street, set them down, and as the building started to crumble, run back up into the tower, knowing that they may never come back. And it was the most selfless and courageous act I've ever seen. And I wept knowing that so many of them would burn in hell for all eternity because they hadn't accepted Jesus Christ as their personal Lord and Savior.
Oh my God.
And it was, and that moment was so sickening. It was such like a gut punch to me, because it was a, it was, the documentary was structured as such that like, absent of that part, it was a very elegiac. It was like something that you would see on you know, HBO or anything. Yeah, that was like, yeah. It was very well made, very well shot, and really, really a strong and compelling reminder of what these guys went through. And then just that last moment was so awful and so horrible and such a perversion of what I think, you know, yeah. The idea of Jesus and Christ you know, dying for humanity's sins, what that message is.
Right, right.
And then the, you know, afterwards the pastors came out and was like, you know, that's why
it's
saving
bad,
people,
huh?
Is so important. Yeah. It's because you never know when it could be too late.
That is sickening, because it's, you know, it's doing it because it's it's the emotional priming. It's getting you into a certain heightened emotional state that's going to make you more.
It's a threat.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's a get saved now, because you might, you know, a plane might crash in your building and then it'll be too late.
Especially that year after 9/11.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the most intense. I mean, it's still, I was at the 9/11 Memorial a couple weeks ago and I was in New York just visiting, and it was just, even then I was like tearing up. It's,
yeah.
Like, it's really intense, sort of like getting back to where.
Yeah. During DCM, we went to One World Trade Center, which is the new. Yeah. And it's amazing. And like seeing the two memorial pools that are the base of the building.
Yeah.
These two massive buildings that are no longer there. It's incredibly powerful. And a reminder of such a horrible day. And it's such a, like, the fact that there's this subcomponent view of it that's, well, man, if only those guys had gotten God.
I mean, that's like a sick punchline.
Yeah, then their sacrifice, you know, wouldn't be in vain.
That's like a really sick, gross punchline.
It's disgusting, yeah.
And so you didn't, not a fan of those people.
No, it killed me. And it kind of, I guess, cemented in my mind that I probably wouldn't find a religion that particularly worked for me.
Yeah.
And you know, I would say Presbyterianism probably worked the most. The other component is that I just didn't feel any connection to a God or Jesus or any of that stuff. So like, to me, the logical side of my brain was like, I can't really rationalize this. And
100%, man. I mean, that's what happened to me with, I mean, I grew up, I was pretty, and like, I was not a rebellious kid in the sense of like, I was a pretty good rules follower. I was into the church and all that. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until in college, and I was studying religion and studying the Bible, that, yeah, I started having that intellectual kind of mental disconnect from, or just that realization that I'm like, I don't have, I can't honestly say I believe this. Like, now that I have more of the evidence of like how the Bible was constructed, it's sort of, I mean, and I, you know, I think the internet did a lot to like kill a lot of budding young millennials' beliefs and literal Christianity. But it wasn't that, again, Presbyterian is like the best case scenario as far as Christians I could have grown up as, in terms of like the least amount of baggage, I think, as far as being an ex-Christian. But even still, like, it's hard not to feel alienated when those week after weeks you would just hear people like talk about Bible lessons or talking about the specific view of Jesus and what Jesus meant to them, and I'm like not able, I'm no longer able to connect with that, and that's why I ended up like leaving the I stopped going to my campus ministry stuff. And but it's like, because it's there's so many what you were saying earlier about like trying to find the place for you that already fits your beliefs.
Right.
That really resonates with me in terms of like, I mean, I've been shopping around church sometimes comically, like going to an evangelical church right now. There's no fucking way I'm going to go to that forever. But like, I'm shopping around like going to the Unitarian church or like Quakers, because it is important among other things, to find somebody that just philosophically resonates with you.
Right.
I mean, who? It's hard to like. It's hard to get on the same page enough with people anyway. Much less if you're like coming from an approach where like I totally don't believe like so much of what you're into.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think the most dangerous thing with evangelical churches is the fact that the pastor, if it were, is not educated in theology. And
right.
So an education in theology and I mean I think Catholicism and especially Jesuits and mm-hmm. and Presbyterians and is you have a very practical approach to religion.
Yes.
You study religious history, you study religious texts, so much of it is like you have a worldview that you hear a lot of times them say like the Bible is a text that was written by men after Christ's mm-hmm. death. And so and
yeah.
so much of it is up for interpretation and that interpretation changes over time and mm-hmm. there is not a literal interpretation of the Bible.
Yeah. Right? And you can look back and like they study like the theological movements within the church too. So you can even go back and be like, you think you're breaking new ground if you
right.
but you're like, no, somebody thought of this like 1,000 years ago.
Right, exactly. But in an evangelical church you're theological movement is or your theological history is at most what 60 years 70 years
right,
you know, like maybe I would say maybe 100 if you want to say like in the early 20th century like is when a lot of these like the tent revivals and a lot of that stuff
yes.
started popping up and that grew out of that and that contemporariness is designed to attract reformed quote-unquote sinners.
Yeah.
Right. And so like that's it's like a that saving you is that's why a lot of your evangelical pastors and things like that tend to have histories like
big ass closets.
Yeah. Big ass closets that they speak about openly. So they open those closets a lot of the times
mm-hmm.
And say like I was a drug dealer or I was, you know, like I was addicted to gambling or I was addicted to women and I was addicted
right.
to all that kind of stuff like that. And so that reform that it becomes the new addiction. That's the replacement addiction.
Yes.
Is religion. And, you know, like good for them if that keeps them from the vices that they felt were self-destructive. And it would be great if that was what it was. But
yeah.
then you do that. And then you also go, oh yeah, by the way, this saved my life. Also, no gay people, marriages between a man and a woman.
Right.
Also, we vote Republican, no abortion, no. And so like,
yeah.
and then you lump all these political beliefs into it and a control mechanism, especially aimed at youth, that basically says you need to surround yourself with like-minded individuals who believe what you do. And what I say is... like that's what
that's
goes.
Yeah.
So like a lot of people that argue would be like, my pastor says, and I was like, your pastor is no more educated about religion than you are. They've had a little bit more time to read the Bible and they've
yeah.
somehow found a way to monetize it. But like,
yeah.
you know, like you could go to college and become a religious studies major and lap them in
semester. A semester. yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, I think what's sinister, but that's something they're good at that I think people connect to is they are good at being often like emotionally resonant with their, you know, with their flock, with their sink, their
they tap in
congregation
for
yeah.
sure. They tap into what people are feeling,
and I think they're better at that than maybe some of the traditional religions that it's like we're doing the same sort of rote, you know. We have a hymn rotation that's like an annual basis, but we all know the hits. You're not getting super surprised week to week.
Church is boring. That's like when you were a kid, church is boring.
Exactly.
Right? When you were a kid, you didn't want to go because you had to sit for an hour and then sit, stand, kneel.
Exactly.
Sing the same songs over and over again. Yeah.
Right. So that's where, you know, it's almost like they're throwing the baby out with the bathwater sometimes, I think, with some of these traditional churches by not trying to even emotionally resonate with people because people aren't even really there for the emotional resonance as much as they are for the stability and the, I don't know, the ritual, the habitual sort of baked in their predetermined path of like, oh, this is how I've always gotten to God. This is the way I'm just going to go. But there's so many, I mean, that's what's frustrating. There's so many different possible ways to connect with it.
There is. The biggest problem, though, with the organizational structure of the traditional religions is there's a bureaucracy built in, right? There's a council and there's a center, and that is disseminating out changes and those beliefs. And
there's a guy who does the bulletins each week, and he likes doing the bulletins a certain way.
Yeah, exactly. So even within a single church, but then even like it's like a government in the sense that there's a local one, there's a state one, there's a national one, then there's an international one.
Right.
And then you know Catholics is the most prime example of that with the Vatican and then all the archdiocese and then the diocese and then but Presbyterianism has it too. There's a national Presbyterian council.
Oh yeah, it's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. Yeah. And same thing with the Lutherans and the Methodists, and they all have that kind of stuff because essentially those are religions that are not as old as Catholicism, but they're still like 500 or 600 years old.
Yeah, they're up there.
Yeah. And so like the Martin Luther thing was like, oh, we're going to be very different than Catholicism, but they just took the Catholic structure and then removed the Catholicness from it.
Right.
And
genius move, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Worked pretty well for them. Yeah.
But at a evangelical church, you're beholden to your own message.
Yeah.
They come together, like all the churches will come together and have these huge, you know, things like, but they're not disseminating, you know, the information between each other and basically saying like, there might be a network of like, that's the thing is chain churches became a,
oh right, like what's the Saddleback,
sort
of a chain now a little
absolutely.
Bit
absolutely, or like the Calvary Chapel.
Oh, I haven't heard
ones.
Of them. Yeah.
There's another, they have a few different ones, that, you know, the evangelical side of it is they can pretty much do whatever they want and say whatever they want.
Yeah.
And so much about it is just like taking the Bible and reading it. And then what the Bible says, you just interpret that however you see fit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and generally it's the most hardline interpretation of the Bible.
Right.
And then you ignore all the stuff that contradicts that belief.
The inconvenient truths.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Which is something that I always had a problem with.
Sure. So. I'm curious, did you ever want to, or did you ever go back to Unitarians? Because Unitarians would seem like it philosophically does fit in. And that's something that really draws me to them, is like, I know how open and sort of belief is almost beside the point, like what you actually, like what you believe. It's almost more important that you don't fervently believe a specific thing,
right,
to be a Unitarian.
Yeah, absolutely. I never did go back to it. Like once we left, I never even really revisited it. It was just this weird thing from my childhood. It's fascinating. I'm on a sketch team at Iowa West, and a girl that's on my sketch team, we were on another sketch team before this, and on the first day I went and she looked and sounded so familiar. And then throughout the course of the thing, I realized that she was someone I grew up with.
Holy fuck.
And she actually lived there. I was only visiting on a week, but we would go on vacations together and our parents were friends. And so like, we were like, oh my God. Like, and it's this thing where like, yeah, we knew each other back in this hippie commune,
the commune days.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I think you have a good point. I do think that the Unitarians, that idea, it's very accepting, and it's very much about togetherness, and
it's like it's like secular humanism.
Yeah absolutely.
But you're like, what makes you not want to go back?
I guess at the moment I'm not looking for a religion. I have what I have, and
you're
and it
good.
Works for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't felt like I've been missing anything like that.
Sure. Yeah.
I have community. I have
need
interests.
That.
Like I have all of those things that church tends to provide for people, especially when they're not in high school or college or in a place where, community is surrounding you.
Yes.
When you have to seek it out, and church can be a really good place for that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And but if you already have that, then
correct.
Like, I'm
yeah.
Good.
Yeah. And since I'm not a particularly spiritual or religious person, it would feel a little disingenuous.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great reason.
Yeah.
Do you meditate or anything like that, or have you...
When I can, I probably
sure.
not. I, it's a, it's one of those things where this sounds dumb, but sometimes you feel too busy to meditate.
Oh, fucking yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
That's almost always what it's.
Yeah, I can't. I can't imagine taking 20 minutes right now.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm never too busy to meditate, but I always say that I am.
Oh, and I'll do 20 minutes of nothing.
Right.
You know, like I'll do 20 minutes of watch a TV episode, but if you were to sit and be like, oh, this now would be a good time to meditate, I'd be like, oh, I have too much to do.
It's really mind blowing.
But I have done it, and I will say that there is something remarkable about it, especially guided meditation.
Yeah. Do you have any favorite like guiders meditator? Like,
there's a YouTube video that that I watch, and I don't even remember the person's name, but it's only 10 minutes long, but it gets me so calm and just releases everything, and I'm so tired afterwards. Like, yeah. But it's a very peaceful tired, and it is really nice. I'd be terrible at doing it if it was just by myself. Mm-hmm. Like I couldn't just sit and do it because my brain is moving a million miles an hour all the time. So I'd never be able to discharge like all of my thoughts and just like sit and be still for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if I'm like, oh, okay, I know that for 10 minutes, this person's going to talk me through it. And then afterwards it's done. I can do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And sorry, is your mom or either parents, are they religious or spiritual still to this day?
My dad still goes to church every Sunday. My dad and stepmom go every Sunday.
Right.
My sisters all went to Catholic school. They went to Catholic elementary school, but then they went to public school for middle school and high school. My parents, I know, changed churches a few years ago. I think they had some issues with the messaging at the church that they were going to. But they sing in the church choir. They do all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So, but we say a grace before, like we say a blessing before every meal, and they have a lot of that type of stuff. But then they almost never talk about it outside of those ceremonial things that they do.
I mean, did you ever, was there a conversation that you had with them? Like, hey, I'm not a Christian anymore or anything like that.
It never was like an anymore. Cause I don't think they ever thought that I was.
Oh,
yeah.
Like, oh, it's definitely didn't stick. Y'all.
Yeah. My parents have always been really good. And this crosses over not just from religion, but from pretty much any aspect of my life, is they were very much like, as long as you're happy, we're happy.
Mm-hmm.
So they never really put a lot of pressure on me to do really much of anything. It was like, I had to follow my own interest, and find where, I wanted to go. So
yeah,
even like when I got into comedy and stuff, whereas a lot of people tend to, their parents tend to have some issues with it and some tension.
Yeah.
It was just a thing where like at first they were like, okay, well that's really tough, but otherwise they've been incredibly supportive.
Yeah.
And so with religion, it was the same way. I think because they had said, you know, we're going to let him figure it out. Like my dad would have me say, my prayers before I went to bed. And like, I remember him like having us like read, like I remember getting like a teen Bible one time, like, and like that kind of stuff. And so,
but it was the '90s. We were all,
yeah, but I never felt like it was like, oh, but you are Catholic or you are, you know, this,
Yeah. That's interesting.
Cause my mom didn't, when I went to the youth group at the Presbyterian church, my parents did not go to church.
Yeah.
So they would drive me to the youth group or they'd drive me to the services.
I know
my parents didn't go.
I know your type. The kids who we never saw them on Sundays, but we'd see them Sunday afternoon. Like we saw.
Oh, I went to service.
Oh, you went
too.
To service too.
Oh yeah,
okay,
I went every Sunday because my friends went to the service too, and so and I was in the bell choir, and I did like I was
that's
a,
right, that's
I was
right.
a, an acolyte or like a I did the that kind of so I like I
You're part- snuffing the candle, lighting and snuffing the candle type thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I was I got very involved because I just liked all the people.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so it was like, but yeah, my parents would drive me, so I went to we went to Sunday school and then the service, so I would get there at like 8:30, services at 10 because Sunday school is from 8:30 to 10. I'd go to the service, and then that night I'd go to the youth group, and
yeah,
we did fun stuff, like we go to Disneyland, we went to like camp, so we did
sure,
stuff like
yeah.
that, and I just like I did it all, but there just was always this part of me that was like I
not quite for me.
Yeah, I mean the religion aspect of it just never. It was just like to be around people that I liked.
That was like the stuff you just put up with just to hang out with cool people.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's kind of a cool, interesting perspective. It seems like Like, do you keep up with any of those people now, or?
Well, a couple of them, we ended up going to the same high school and became really good friends, but they had gone to a different middle school, so I was really good friends with them before we ended up at the same high school, and now we're still friends. Like, I saw one of them, like, a couple years ago, that was the most recent, but she lives in Washington now, but we still, like, every once in a while, we'll check in with each other. And,
yeah. Are they, do you know how religious they are? I mean, most of my ex-Presbyterian friends, I don't think go that often.
I don't think they are. Yeah.
But I can't speak firsthand. I'm curious to something you're talking about. You're not a spiritual person, and but you have community. I assume you're talking about from like the like improv and sketch type communities. I'm curious too if there's, because sometimes in maybe the more esoteric moments of improv, like books, you'll hear people talking about improv as sort of a quasi spiritual practice, or is this like this way to access this more egoless type state where you're not, you know, when you're at best at improv, you're like sort of like in the scene, you're in the zone, you're not thinking about yourself really directly, you're just trying to it's living in service to the scene. I mean, is that something that you experience too? I mean, do you think that do you consider, let's say, finding excellent group mind or something, do you consider that a component of spirituality in the sense of, I'm working under like Sam Harris's like atheist sort of definition of spirituality is like forgetting, like realizing that I is sort of an illusion.
Mm. Sure.
you don't want to answer yes.
No, I can't. It's not, it's just not really something that I've super thought about, in terms of, thinking of performing improv as a spiritual experience. I can tell you that the way I feel when I do improv and, you let go of so much, like it's probably the most in the moment you are if you're doing it. Like there's times when you're very much not in the moment and those tend to be the worst.
Yeah. And they're the least enjoyable.
Yeah. That's
too.
The worst show is because you're self-conscious about how it's going. But in the moments where you're just kind of like free and you're up there and doing it, I can say that that's the most like free, that you can feel. It has never been a spiritual or religious experience for me. And maybe it's just because that's just not how my brain operates.
Right.
But I think of it in terms of the personal benefits that I get from it. I think a lot of us in the comedy community, tend to be drawn to comedy because of some sort of outsider bent that we experienced when we were younger.
Yeah.
Self-consciousness, social anxiety, yes, difficulty making and maintaining friendships and relationships. And so when we talk to people on a one-to-one basis in the real world, it tends to feel awkward and uncomfortable, and it feels like, why can't I do this sometimes?
Yes.
But then you get up on stage and you can kind of transform into something else, and it becomes significantly easier. And so there's so many people that I know, and I even count myself, where like sometimes I feel like, oh, interacting with other human beings can be really hard.
Yeah.
And then you watch these people up on stage and you're like, oh, they transform and they come alive and they embody so much, like there's so much knowledge in their head that's being displayed and so much intuition about human beings. And in that sense, I think that's incredibly positive for people. I think it's very therapeutic. I think it's very cathartic. I think it's so great, especially since it's so in the moment, because the difference between that and sketch, which I also do, is, you know, you got to learn your lines. And so you are, you are inevitably in your head in some way, because you got to make sure that you hit that next mark and you got to make sure that you hit that next beat, because there are other people counting on you to feed them cues and feed them lines. And so, it can look as seamless and effortless, as possible, the more times you run it and the more times you rehearse it.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it very much is a thing that has been built and manufactured, whereas improv is very much,
yes,
ethereal.
It's interesting too, because what you said about, I guess what gets people into comedy really resonated with me, in terms of like, it does seem like a lot of comedic type minds, especially, I know a lot of stand-ups who are certainly that way. I mean, that's kind of, I feel that way too a lot of times. It's like we have all these times growing up and even in our still adult lives where we feel like you said, outsiders. Like it's hard for us to totally get in, especially doing fucking small talk. Like small talk is the worst
shit.
But But yeah, but then the medium of improv, or it feels like the medium of stand-up is sort of a way to communicate maybe things that you can't say directly to somebody, or you can't, it doesn't work in conversation. But I think maybe it's interesting about improv is like it's almost forcing a bunch of like socially awkward kids how to like figure out how to like play together in a fun,
yeah, absolutely,
satisfying way.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because when you watch people on stage, a lot of times you go like, oh, that's how you wish that you were in real life. Like, I feel that way sometimes where it's like you can be more assertive, you can be more, you can experiment with status, like, yeah, you can be high status, even though in your life you might feel low status or feel like you're very self-conscious and timid, and on stage you can be confident, and on stage you can you can manipulate the world around you, and you can create that over and over and over, night after night. And so I think in that sense, from a community standpoint and from especially from an adult standpoint, it's kind of an amazing thing that there is this place, and it has its drawbacks, like as any community does. But I don't think anyone really expects to leave college, move to a new city, and then instantly be surrounded by another group of thousands of people that are living and working and creating and in a way competing with each other, but also especially with improv and stand-up, mm-hmm, like it's a healthy competition that requires collaboration in order for everyone to succeed. So it's remarkable in that sense. And for any of the shortcomings that it may have, it's a really cool thing that has been cultivated out here. So
totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I mean, I was just in the clubhouse, I think, just the other night, not even for the Indie Improv Festival, but for something else. And I just remember like leaving the show I was in and then going out to the lobby, not recognizing a single person. I'm sure we've all had that feeling at the clubhouse, especially. And it's like, or maybe no one or two people,
right.
But then you're like, fuck, there's a lot of creative people out here.
Yeah.
Who knows how many talented people like I was just staring at in like so unique ways that it's a cool feeling. And I think what's cool too about improv, that I've never thought about it in this way, but it's like a classic, I guess it's anytime we have a shared objective, it does seem to bring humans closer together, and maybe whether it's from hunting or for sport or for
absolutely
your refrigerator in your basement, but like for improv, having that, it's just a different like our objective obviously is to laugh, and it's to be successful as a team and for everybody to fucking kill it out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I never really had the never really connected it with religion and spirituality.
I had a very loaded question that you I wasn't expecting you to have done that. So you answered that very, very expertly for as far as
being
I'm good at like putting what I hope is the answer into my questions.
It makes sense. Like I can see, it's not that, doesn't seem like that far of a leap. That's the thing, is it wasn't like that loaded where I was like, cause when you said it, I was like, oh yeah, I can see how this could be.
Yeah. But it wasn't.
Nope.
That's great. Yeah. we're about out of time. We don't have time to make up a religion. Sometimes we do, but we don't, not today, but instead, I haven't asked this question to somebody before. This will be our last question.
Okay.
What would it and this, you can answer this as flippantly or as seriously as you want. What would it take for you to go back to church?
To go back to church? I think it would just need to be a need in my life for it, in some way or another. And there would have to be something that compelled me to go back. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there would ever be a moment where I'd have like a crisis of faith or anything like that. But
what if I told you you're going to play Chubby Bunny and have cool rock music beforehand?
I wouldn't go.
Well, fuck, there goes my plan.
Yeah.
Uh, That's perfect. Well, anyway, thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Do you have anything you want to plug? I mean, so when does Catharsis come on?
The next Catharsis will be in September. I don't have the date yet.
Okay. It's a monthly show?
It's a monthly show at UCB Sunset.
Uh-huh.
However, I have a show going up on August 31st at 5:30 p.m. at UCB Sunset called Matt and Charlie Rob a Bank.
Okay, I think this might be out after that comes out.
Oh, okay. Well, then you will have missed it.
I'm sure it's great.
Yeah, Purgatory's the second and fourth Monday of every month at the club. House at 8:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month in the Inner Sanctum Cafe.
Perfect. Man, you have that down.
Yep.
And any social media people want to find you on, like Twitter?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Charles Mihalik. So you'll just have to look at how he spells it in the episode title and hope it's right.
Yeah.
But yeah, at Charles Mihalik on Twitter.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks so much, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
This is great. And that is the show. Thanks again to Charlie for coming out. Go to chooseyourownreligion.com for more old stuff. Send me an email at joe@joequint.net. I love you. Namaste.